questions?
Eight days from now,
so Tuesday. Yep, that's the first test. We got a quiz on Friday. Yes.
Sorry, I saw on the schedule like Friday is like a review day.
Yes.
I
haven't taught this course for 30 years. So I put those in there because I wasn't sure we were going to keep up with the schedule. So I'm not entirely sure.
Okay.
So what we also have is what I call a help day. So sometime, typically, it's probably going to be Monday at 4 or Monday at 8, something like that. There's an opportunity for both classes to get together and ask questions. So you've got that anyway, and I guess we'll see what we do on that so-called review day. But it's there mostly for two reasons: to make sure that we will have covered the material that's going to be on the exam, and if we've got a chance to review that material. Question?
So for the test, I think you said this before, but just to make sure, like, do we get either a cheat sheet or do you provide us with?
So you can write anything. You can write almost anything you want on one side of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. The one thing you don't want to write is like worked examples.
Right. Okay.
So you're going to put equations and maybe some drawings, some definitions. Those are all legit.
You can't do worked problems.
I don't want to see a
work.
No. I will yell at you if you put worked problems on there.
If we're willing to put up with the yelling.
Well, frankly, I don't know what I would do if you did put worked problems on there, right? It's hard to kind of ex post facto to do things. So it would probably be yelling, mostly. You're used to yelling? That's a bad sign. I would be severely disappointed. Are you used to severe disappointment?
Yes.
You can live with that, too. Okay.
How
about rapping on your...
That's the worst you got.
Why bother? So we need to vote on that help session. We're not going to do it today, so it's mostly for reminding you. So probably you want to look at your schedules. It maybe could be late Sunday, but my guess is that people are going to choose it to be kind of 4-ish on Monday or 8-ish or something like that on Monday. So WebAssign doesn't do graphical stuff, right, as I discovered for the first problem of the vector chapter. So what we've got here is a couple of homework problems that I absolutely want you to draw stuff for, and so you're going to turn those in on paper on the appropriate day. What's on the exam? So the best way to kind of think about the exam is to look at the old 191 exam. So 191 covers what we're covering, but with calculus, but the students in there have just started calculus, so we're really pretty much parallel at this point. So you can look at my 10 years old 191 exam to get some ideas of what will be on yours. It'll have like 12 multiple choice questions and like 5 problem questions. And the idea is that the iQuiz questions are to remind you about how the multiple choice works, and the homework will be similar to the ones that are on the exam. More questions? Okay, so Newton's three laws. The first one seems kind of dull. If there are no forces operating on something, it's going to go forever in a straight line at constant velocity. Typically, things do have forces on them, so it's not all that useful usually. Newton's second law says we can calculate the acceleration by taking the vector sum of the forces and dividing it by the mass. And you should think about this equation as putting the effects on one side of the equation and the cause on the other. So the forces, we're going to have a bunch of equations that give us what the forces are. And so in that situation, we can add them up and divide by the mass and figure out what the effect is. So the forces we've got so far are the weight. That's always just given by the mass times this magic number of 9.8 meters per second squared. We've got contact forces when surfaces are in contact. So we know that weight is pushing this thing down, but it's not going down, so the table must be pushing this thing up. That's a force that's perpendicular to the table. The complicated word for perpendicular is normal, so we're not talking about something that's usual, we're talking about something that's perpendicular to the surface. I seem to be able to push on this thing without it going anyplace. So there must be also a contact force which is fighting the force that I'm applying. So forces that are parallel to the surface are called frictional forces, and if I push hard enough, I can exceed that frictional force. So when we have things that are in motion, we have what's called kinetic friction. When things aren't moving yet, we have static friction. And we'll talk more about those on Wednesday. We've got strings. You can't push with a string. The string tension is the same at both ends. Those are kind of what we've learned so far about strings. Eventually, we'll learn about springs and a more general formula for gravity when you're far from the Earth's surface. Next semester, we'll talk about the electric force. Kind of the idea is, for any old force, we're going to get an equation that describes what that force is in a given circumstance. We can plug it in there, and we can get the effect of that force. Questions? So what we're going to be doing a lot, I think we did this a little bit last time, is what are called free body diagrams. So these are diagrams where we just show all of the forces that are acting. And that's really what you're going to be turning in these problems that are due for homework. Questions? Okay, so before class, somebody asked me about one of the homework problems, which is basically 15 in the book. So if you've got your books, you can take a look at 15. So this deals with a ball that is going to bounce, and it starts from 30 meters high, and it's going to bounce up to 20 meters high, and they ask us to figure out what the force is that's pushing it up, this rebounding force. So kind of the picture is we've got the ball just before it hits the ground, it's moving down. The ball just after it hits the ground, it's going up. And this time interval is just 2 milliseconds. They tell us the mass of this ball is 0.5 kilogram. And we're supposed to find the force. Now, technically, of course, the net force on this object is part of this contact force that's pushing down. And there's also a the contact force that's pushing it up and the gravitational force that's pulling it down. And I think the problem actually asks for the net force, which is the sum of these two. And of course, the net force we can calculate by taking the mass times the acceleration. And we remember from last time that the acceleration is the change in velocity divided by the change in time. So they haven't told us any velocities in a straightforward way. They've said that this thing fell from 30 meters and it's going to go up to 20 meters. And I think it's pretty clear that those distances are related to velocities. So we have to convert those distances to velocities using, for example, the equations of constant acceleration, right? So you really should have these guys tattooed on yourself, right? So that y is equal to y naught plus v sub o yt plus 1/2 at squared, where usually the acceleration is minus g. I don't know if I'll bother to write them all down. What we want here is an equation that involves distances and velocities, and of course we know the acceleration of gravity. And doesn't involve time, because they haven't told us anything about how long it takes this thing to fall. So on that list of equations, the one that involves these quantities, generally speaking, would be that the velocity is equal to the initial velocity squared plus 2 times the acceleration times the change in position. So for our particular application for this fall, the acceleration is equal to minus g. The fall distance, which I'd usually call delta y, is minus 30, right, because it's going down. And the initial velocity at the top is 0. So the velocity right before it hits the ground, we can calculate as v squared has to be 2 times minus 9.8 times minus 30. So V has to be the square root of all of that. Now, technically speaking, the velocity is going to be negative. Right? So maybe I should put the negative sign in there. Now, if you think about it, this upward bound thing has to work exactly the same way. So this velocity that it has when it's going up is going to be plus 2 times 9.8 times the 20 meters that it's going to eventually reach. So this change in velocity is going to be the final velocity minus the initial velocity, which was downward, divided by the time.
So in this case, is the change in x like interchangeable to the change in y?
Yeah, so these general equations, which we did first, they're true whether you call them x, y, or z. So when we dealt with vertical motion, we chose usually to take y going in the upward direction, and then that made the acceleration be minus g. And now we're calling that direction y as opposed to x. More questions? Going. So we're interested in the velocity. So for this whole upward spike, I could work the problem out using this equation.
Yeah.
And maybe we could do that. But it has to work the same, right? Because if it fell from 20, it has to be the same thing as the velocity it takes to reach 20. They have to be symmetric. But if we want to work it out the other way, the velocity at the top is going to be 0. So we're going to have 0 is equal to V naught squared minus 2 times G. Now it's going to go up, so it's going to be plus 20 meters. And now we bring this thing to the side of the equation, we get exactly the same result. So the velocity that you get from falling is exactly the velocity that it takes to rise, except that it has a different sign. So the symbol g always means plus 9.8 meters per second squared.
Okay. Because it's the square root of the negative out front.
This minus sign here?
Yeah.
Yeah. So there are two square roots, and they're both valid solutions to this equation. So it could either be plus or minus. And I have to recognize that in this particular instance, it's going down. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I chose the, there are lots of ways of working the problem, and I guess maybe I should have been more explicit. I took my 0 for my y-axis there, and then, so the initial y position was going to be 30, and the final y position was going to be 0. More questions? Okay, so the plan is to work through a bunch of these problems. And let's start with this guy here. So this is more of a conceptual sort of problem. And what we're supposed to do is to figure out what the spring scale would read in all of these cases. So I think this is the easiest case. What is that spring scale going to read? It's going to read the weight of this thing, which is 5 times g. How about in this case? Well, think about it. Is this case really any different from that case? Does it matter whether it's connected to a wall or whether it's connected to something else that isn't moving?
Does that spring have two different springs on each side?
It's just like a fish scale, right? Typically there's one spring in it, and it's a matter of how much that spring will stretch. Yeah, is that clear? I mean, yeah. Doesn't matter whether it's connected to a wall or something else.
Yeah, I just thought there was two springs on it, so it was one in each direction.
Can you repeat all of that? I think that kind of lost.
So we typically have scales that look kind of like this. So they're spring scales with some sort of marker. I call them fish scales because you often have them. And they have, you know, hooks on them. Like that. And they typically record the weight that you're pulling on one side. And the important thing to recognize is they are always being pulled equally on the other side. Otherwise, they'd have to be moving. And it doesn't matter then whether the other side is connected to a wall or to a rhinoceros or to this 5-kilogram thing that's on the other side. It's always going to show the weight, how hard you're pulling, which in metric units is going to be newtons, so it's going to be 5 times g. How about this circumstance?
Then it'll be 2 times.
Yeah, this pulley is basically irrelevant. It's having to support both of those weights, so it's going to read 10 times g. Let's hold off on this inclined plane for a second. Okay, so let's take a look at this problem here, 34, which is our first introduction, I think, to doing free body diagrams. So what we have are blocks. And so first of all, an overall comment about these problems. So we're going to see less and less numbers associated with this thing, and we're going to have letters. So they're not telling us what the mass of one is or the mass of two is. We're just supposed to use letters to describe those sorts of situations. So here we have two blocks that are connected by two strings, and we're supposed to figure out what the acceleration is and what the forces are, etc. And I think the easiest thing to look at here is part B. So how does the acceleration of this guy compare to the acceleration of that guy? Say it. They're the same, right? They're connected by a string. Whatever the position of this one is, the position of this one is just whatever it is, 1 meter more. Whatever the velocity of this one is, has to have the same velocity of this one. Whatever the acceleration of this one is, has to have the same acceleration. Everyone in the car has the same acceleration. They're all moving together. So if we recognize that they all have the same acceleration, we can start to draw pictures that show all of the forces that are involved. So for just object one, it weighs something, so there's going to be a force of gravity that's pulling it down. That's its mass times g. It's not falling down, so there must be some normal force that's pushing it up. There's this obvious force, Ta, that's pushing it to the right. And it must be, you can only pull with a rope, so it must be pulled in the opposite direction by that string. So that's what we mean by a free body diagram. Draw out the object separate and display all of the forces that are acting on it. For the second mass, it also weighs something, and it's also being supported, and it's being pushed to the right by the spring, being pulled to the right by that string. So once we've drawn the free body diagram, the next thing to do is to set the sum of the forces equal to the mass times the acceleration. The sum of the forces in any particular direction, remembering that we can treat the x and y directions as totally separate, right? That's the lesson of vectors. So we know that this object isn't going to jump off the table and it's not going to dig into the table. So there's going to be no acceleration in the y direction. So the sum of the forces in the y direction have to be zero. If I call this the positive y direction, then I have to have the normal force minus the weight is equal to zero. If I call this the positive x direction, then TA is something that's pushing it in the positive direction. TB is pushing it in the opposite direction. The sum of the forces has to equal the mass of the object times the acceleration. Okay? No. So we got two forces. This one's in the positive direction. This one's in the negative direction. So the sum of the forces is this. And the mass of the object is that. It has that acceleration. Okay? Do the same thing for this guy. In the y direction, there's no acceleration. So the sum of the forces have to equal zero. In the x direction, the only force acting is TB. So it has to equal the mass of the object times the acceleration. And I've used the same symbol A because they have the same acceleration. However one moves, the other one has to move. So let's assume, for example, that we know the masses and we know how hard we're pulling with TA, and we're interested in what the other quantities are, like TB. So in terms of calculating the acceleration, we just have two formulas. And we don't know what TB is, and we don't know what the acceleration is. So we have two equations and two unknowns. Typically, if the number of equations equals the number of unknowns, we're safe. And usually the solution is to take one unknown and plug it into the equation, eliminating that unknown. So we're going to have TA minus M2A is equal to M1A. So the tension has to be the total mass times the acceleration. So the acceleration has to be whatever we're pulling divided by the total weight. Notice we could have come to exactly the same conclusion if we had just called this whole thing one object.
I'm just wondering, what does that say? TA equals M1. I can't read what that next thing is.
M1.
This one? This one. So that's M1 plus M2.
Oh, it's plus.
Plus. More questions? Handwriting questions are always fair game. If we had just called this one combined object, then we would say the only horizontal force is this force TA, and that force has to cause the acceleration of all of this mass. So we could have, in some sense, done this quickly by just having a combined object. In some sense, this string isn't any different than the forces that are holding this solid together, right? There's some sort of force that's keeping this half connected to that half. And those internal forces pretty much have to cancel out in calculating the result. Okay, so once we've got the acceleration, if we wanted to know what TB was, we could plug it in there and get what the tension on that guy is. So free body diagrams for each object in the situation, draw all of the forces on it. And the reason for doing that is we're going to look at, in each direction, the sum of the forces has to equal the mass times the acceleration. So here we have a similar sort of situation. So now we have two objects, M1 and M2, that are being pushed. And it should be pretty clear that I could treat those things as one object if I wanted to. Why bother to treat them as two separate objects? Well, in this list of questions that are asked, they're actually asking what this force is between M1 and M2. So we're forced by the problem to break it up into pieces, even if we didn't want to. So if we look at M2, the force capital F doesn't touch M2. The only thing that's moving it forward is the contact force that exists on this wall. That normal force, perpendicular to the surface, is what's causing M2 to accelerate. M2, of course, has a weight. And there must be another normal force, let me call it N2, that is pushing it up. But there's no acceleration in the y direction, so those guys are going to be equal. So what we learn from this object is that the contact force between 1 and 2 is what's causing the acceleration of M2. If we look at M1, Newton promises us that if M1 is pushing on M2, then M2 is pushing M1 back. So there has to be an equal and opposite force that is pushing backwards on M1. Mm-hmm.
So does N equal M2A or does
N2 equal M2A? So they're going to look pretty similar, and I think both equations are true. So here in the x direction, the normal force is what's causing the horizontal acceleration. In the vertical direction, the normal force minus the weight is causing no acceleration. So the normal force is going to equal m2g. So it all sounds the same. Normal force equals mass times acceleration. But here we're talking about this force, and here we're talking about that force. Okay, so this thing is being touched by this force capital F, and it has a weight, and it has a normal force, I'm going to call it N1, and just as before, it's not jumping off the table, it's not digging into the table, there's no acceleration in the y direction, so N1 minus M1g has to equal zero. The normal force is just equal to the weight in this circumstance. If I call this the positive x direction, then F is acting in the positive direction, N is going in the minus x direction, that has to equal the mass times the acceleration. And I use the same symbol for acceleration for M1 and M2 because they're connected. They're forced to have exactly the same position, velocity, and acceleration. So if the forces and masses are known and we're trying to find the normal force, then what I've got here are two equations and two unknowns. Yes?
Is it safe to say that the force being pushed on M1 is greater than normal force if it's moving forward?
So is this greater than this if it's moving forward?
No, is F greater than normal, the
N? Yeah. So I think the answer that you want is yes, but I have to be a little bit careful because the velocity is different from the acceleration. So for sure, if F is bigger than N, if it's accelerating that way. More questions? Okay, so if I have two equations and two unknowns, I can take this N and plug it in there, and then I've got F minus M2A has to equal M1A, which means that the force has to equal the total mass times the acceleration. And finally, the acceleration is just the force divided by the total mass, which is exactly the conclusion we would come to if we thought of this as being just one object. But the problem asked us to find the normal force. Once we've got the acceleration, we can plug it in there and get the normal force. Okay, so take the object apart, draw all the forces, recognize Newton's third law when we have object A and object B with a mutual force. Set the sum of the forces in every direction equal to the mass times the acceleration in that direction.
So would we be given those masses, I assume? Like if we were supposed to find that normal force, we need mass 2 times acceleration?
So pretty commonly, if you look at these problems, they don't give us numbers.
Yeah.
They just give us letters. So here it's saying, when they say that these blocks have mass M1 and M2, I think we're supposed to assume that they are known, even though we don't know what the number is.
Okay, so like since it asks what is the normal force between, or the force between the two blocks,
So that has to be that equation.
You would just use N equals M2 and then plug in A once you find it.
So I would write this equation for the normal force.
Okay. Yeah, I was just wondering if you were supposed to like be plugging in numbers or not.
There are no numbers to plug in, right? So, and you'll see that that's kind of what, so here the next problem actually does have numbers in it. But pretty commonly these things don't have numbers, they just have letters. So here we have kind of a combination problem, right? We've got strings, we've got contact forces. And if we just want the acceleration of this thing, we could treat all of this thing as one object that has a mass of 6 kilograms. And we could get the acceleration of the system. But they're not going to ask us for that. They're going to ask us for what the string tension is and what this internal force is. So we're going to be forced to break this thing up into pieces. So let's first work at the quick way, right? So we said that if we treat that object as one big object with a mass that has the sum of masses, 6 kilograms, then it must be that the acceleration is the net horizontal force, the only horizontal force, which is this 42 newtons, divided by 6, so 7 meters per second. But, as I say, we're forced to break it up into pieces, so let's draw all the free body diagrams. So we have object 3 here. It's being pulled, obviously, with this tension of 42 newtons. It's being pulled back with some tension T that we don't know. It certainly weighs something. And there must be a normal force that is pushing it up. So those are the only forces acting on that object. If we look at 2 isn't connected to any strings. So there aren't any string forces that are acting on it, but there's a normal force that's pushing it to the right. It, of course, weighs something, and there must be a normal force that's pushing it up. Those things are just going to cancel because it's not going to jump off the plane.
So we don't need to worry about acceleration in this case?
So we haven't gotten to accelerations yet. So the first thing we're doing is just drawing the pictures that display all of the forces. For 1, we've got tension this way. We've got the reaction force. If 1 is pushing on 2 to the right, 2 is pushing on 1 to the left. And of course, it weighs something. And there's a normal force that's pushing it up. So in the y direction, things are pretty dull. Normal forces are always canceling weight, so the normal force is just equal to the weight. In the x direction, let's call the direction it moves the positive direction. Now we can talk about accelerations. So the sum of the forces in the positive x direction has to equal the mass times the acceleration. They all have to have the same acceleration because they're all in the same car. So we just need one symbol for that. So here we have T minus N is equal to M1A. This is a force in the negative x direction. This is in the positive x direction. This one here, N is just in the positive x direction. And here we have the 42 newtons minus T is equal to M3 times A. So first of all, if I just rewrite all those equations, so we have T minus N is M1A, and we've got N is equal to M2A, and we've got 42 newtons minus T is equal to M3A. So we got 3 equations, and typically we don't know 3 things, right? We don't know N, we don't know T, and we don't know the acceleration. And 3 equations and 3 unknowns, we should be able to solve it. And before I was advertising kind of plug and chug, what very commonly, but not always, works is if we just add up the equations. So notice that N and minus N are on the same side of this equation. So if I add up all of the left-hand sides, they'll cancel. And T and minus T, both on the same side of the equation. So if I just add up these equations, things simplify pretty quick. On the left-hand side, I just have the 42 newtons. On the right-hand side, I just have the total mass times A. And that's what we knew right from the start, right? The acceleration has to be the net force divided by the total mass. But we've proved it separately this way. Once we've got the acceleration, we can plug it in there to get what the normal force is. And we can plug it in here, say, to get what the tension is. Okay, keep the object separate, draw all of the forces, set the sum of the forces equal to the mass times the acceleration, solve the resulting equations. Often, but not always, just adding up the equation will solve them for you. It's kind of your first guess. So here we have what's sometimes called Atwood's machine. So we have two masses that are connected to a pulley. And you know how this works, right? The heavy guy is going to win. So this guy is going to go down, and this guy is going to go up. And of course, they're connected by a string. So however much this one goes down, this one has to go up. So they share the acceleration, except one is going up and one is going down. So what we have now, and we've actually had it all the time, but maybe it wasn't quite so obvious, is we have to choose which way our axes go. Right, so the picture is, and I'm just going to use letters, I'm going to call this one M3 and this one M5. We know that this one's going up and this one's going down, and they have exactly the same acceleration. And I think that it's convenient, not required, but it's convenient to pick the positive direction to be the way it's going to in fact go. If you don't choose, if you don't know which way it's going to go, you can choose those directions arbitrarily and you'll still get the right answer. But it seems to me things are a little bit easier in solving the equations if you pick things that are oriented the way things are actually going to go. So if it's going down, I'm going to call it a positive velocity. So there's no reason that I have to choose the same direction for different objects. So I could have chosen different positive directions for all of these equations before, but it was pretty obvious that I might as well choose my x direction consistently. So here's a case where I think it's slightly easier to choose inconsistent directions, which is allowed. All I have to do is set the sum of the forces in any direction for any particular object equal to zero. Or equal to the mass times the acceleration. Okay, free body diagrams first. So we have M3, it weighs something, so there's a force of gravity down, and it's being pulled up by that string. M5, it's exactly the same story. It's being pulled down by gravity, and it's being pulled up by the string. Fundamental property of strings is they pull the same on both ends, so those tensions have to be the same. Now, if I call the shared acceleration A, one up and one down, and I call this the positive direction, this the positive direction, the sum of the forces is going to be T minus M3G. That has to equal the mass times the acceleration. And here, I get the opposite orientation because I have the opposite sign here. I get M5G minus T has to equal its mass times the shared acceleration. So I don't know what the tension is. I don't know what the acceleration is. Two equations, two unknowns. And in this situation and in lots of others, if I just add the equations, this unknown cancels out. So I just get the difference in mass is equal to the total mass times the acceleration, or the acceleration is equal to the mass difference times g. So there are lots of things that you can kind of check immediately. If the masses were the same, it would balance, right? So it shouldn't accelerate. And you can see that if m5 equals m3, I'd get an acceleration of 0. If m3 were really more massive than m5, then I'd get a negative value for acceleration, right? It would have won. If I really want the tension, once I know the acceleration, I can plug into either one of those equations and get the corresponding formula for tension. So display all the forces in a free body diagram, write the resulting equations, F equals ma for every possible direction, solve the resulting equations. Questions?
I'm still a little confused about how your accelerations can be going in the opposite direction but still at the same time.
Yeah, that's how it'll work, right? If you think about it, as much as one goes up, the other one has to go down.
So it doesn't matter which way it's going, it's just the fact the acceleration is going to be the same.
Doesn't matter which way it's going.
It's acceleration is increasing no matter which direction the object is falling or rising. As long as the velocity is increasing or decreasing, the velocity is changing from, if it changes from -5 to -6 in a second, it still has an acceleration of 1 because it's continually.
This acceleration doesn't have to do with the direction?
It doesn't have to.
Well, so I find. Why don't you state your question again? I think it's more confusing than it's worth.
I get it.
So it's going up.
It's just an acceleration.
The other one's going down. And if we're going to assign signs, it's up to us to choose which way we're choosing to be positive. So typically, we've chosen the same y-axis, always going up. In that case, this one is going up at, say, 1 meter per second, and this one is going up at -1 meter per second. And we can deal with that sign. We can work it that way, but it seems easier to choose a different axis for this one. So now this one is 3 meters per second, so this one is 3 meters per second, but in the opposite direction. So let's take a look at how we would solve it if instead of choosing this to be the positive direction, I chose that to be the positive direction, which I'm allowed to. These are all choices. You have to get the same answer in the end. So now, T is a positive force, weight is a negative force, and the acceleration is minus A, right? Because the acceleration is in the minus direction compared to what I've chosen to be the positive direction. And if you look at this equation, notice that it's just this equation multiplied by minus 1. So we're getting exactly the same equation. I just find this a little bit of a funny choice. I find it more convenient to take my positive directions to be the direction that it's actually moving, then I have plus acceleration as opposed to minus acceleration. There's another question over there.
I was just going to say, I think the confusion is just that, like, all we care about is the acceleration and not the direction the object is going.
Well, we care about both. But the direction is pretty obvious, right? The 5 is going to go down and the 3 is going to go up.
Yeah.
So you're not going to be confused more than a millisecond on that. Right?
But the acceleration is not affected by the direction in which it is going. If we know they're both going to continue moving in the same path, the acceleration is not affected by one moving down and one moving up.
Well, I'm not sure what I want to say to that statement. So If we choose a consistent direction, then one has an acceleration of plus and one has the acceleration of minus. And that's fine, right? That works. If I make an inconsistent choice, which I'm allowed to, I can choose my axes separately for every object, then they both have the same sign of the acceleration. Yeah, so all these equations look the same, right? They're kind of A minus B, and sometimes the B is second and sometimes it's first, so what's the right answer? So what I did consistently is I chose, and it is arbitrary, which way is the plus direction. And then T is in the plus direction, so it gets a plus sign. And the weight is in the minus direction, so it gets a minus sign. When I choose this guy to be positive down, now mg is in the positive direction, so it gets a plus sign, and t is that way.
So if you want t to always be first, just make sure the acceleration direction is going the way you want. Like,
yeah.
In that case, that's what I'm going to follow.
So you can choose that, and then you can put the minus a in.
Okay.
And that's, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that, but at least to me it seems foreign.
Yeah.
But if you're happy with it, it'll give you the right answer in the end. More questions. So the coordinate choice is it's a pure choice. And it's funny because often choices have consequences. There shouldn't be any consequences to this choice. You should be allowed to choose any way you want and get exactly the same answer as your neighbor who made a totally different choice. Now that said, beauty is in the eye of the observer, kind of. We'll see cases where it's more clear-cut that one way is better than another. But no matter how you choose it, you will get the same answer. It's just how much work you have to do. Here, it's just a minus sign, so it's not a big deal. More questions? Okay, so let's start thinking of some of these inclined plane problems. So there aren't, frankly, a lot of ways we can make problems. So it's not that inclined planes are particularly near and dear to the hearts of physicists. It's just another way we can make a problem that has the sum of the forces equal to the mass times the acceleration. And what's interesting about this is it shows us the kind of freedom to select different coordinate systems. So if we have the simple problem of just a mass that's sitting on an inclined plane, what are the forces that are acting? Well, gravity is, of course, straight down, just like it always is. There's a contact force here which has to be perpendicular to the surface. That's what the word normal means. And unless we have friction or something else, those are the only forces that are acting. If we did have friction, right, it would have to be perpendicular to the normal force. It would have to be kind of like in that direction. So right now, we just got two vectors, and typically you want to choose your coordinate system so that it makes it as easy as possible. And they're kind of two choices, right? We could make, quote unquote, the usual choice, where we have y and x lining up like that. So that means that gravity is simple, but the normal force is complicated. Or we could choose it like this. And that means that the normal force is simple, but gravity is complicated. So it seems to be kind of a either way works. But there is one other factor that means that the slanty version is the easiest way to work it. And that is that the acceleration has to be parallel to the surface. The thing can't jump out or dig into the inclined plane. So now it's 2-1. In favor of the slanty coordinate system. The other system works, but it's trickier. Okay, so if I choose the slanty coordinate system, so I have, I don't know, my free body diagram got kind of crossed out. So let's start fresh. So we know that we're taking our coordinate system like this. We got gravity straight down. and we've got the normal force normal to the surface. So I'm going to have to write that gravitational force, which isn't square to my coordinate system, in terms of a y component and an x component. So it's trigonometry time. Well, with a little bit of work, you can convince yourself that this angle there is the same as that angle there. How can you convince yourself of that? Well, this little guy and that little guy have to be the same, right? Because they're crossing lines. These two guys have to add up to 90 degrees, and these two guys have to add up to 90 degrees. So if this plus x equals 90 and x plus that equals 90, then those two guys have to be the same. Another way of kind of thinking it through is think about what would happen if this were a flatter inclined plane. As this thing becomes flatter and flatter and flatter, then this y-axis becomes closer and closer to vertical, and this angle is getting smaller and smaller and smaller. Okay, so if that's the angle theta, then this x component is going to be the weight times the sine of that angle because it's opposite. And this component of gravity is going to be mg times the cosine of the angle. Some of the forces in the y direction have to be zero because there's no acceleration in the y direction. It's not going to jump off of the plane. So the normal force minus this piece of gravity has to add up to zero. So the normal force is just mg times the cosine of the angle. So if you've ever used a balance, you know that if the balance isn't level, it's going to record the wrong weight. It's going to record a lesser weight. Balances record the normal force, and so you're going to be off because the cosine of theta isn't going to be 1. In terms of the x direction, the only force that's acting is that component of gravity. So the sum of the forces in the x direction has to give us the mass times the acceleration. So I don't know, the mass cancels out and the acceleration is just going to be g sine theta. Okay, so these tilty coordinate systems are favorable for solving inclined plane problems. They're not required, but they make life easier. So here we have, you know, kind of the same sort of situation that we've had, except we've got things on an inclined plane as opposed to being accelerated or something like that. And if we draw all of the forces in our free body diagram, so the top guy, let me call him M1, he's being pulled this way by T1. And it's being pulled the other way by T2. It, of course, weighs something, so it has some weight, and there has to be a normal force that is pushing it up. For the other guy, let me call it M2, same string, same force, opposite direction. You can only pull with a string. It weighs something. And there's a normal force if we choose the tilty coordinate system. Then we're going to have to break gravity up into the new y and the new x components. Just as before, this x component is going to be the weight times the sine of the angle. And this new y component is going to be the weight times the cosine of the angle. The acceleration in the y direction has to be zero. So N2 minus M2g cosine theta has to be zero. So the normal force is just like it was before, mg cosine theta. In the x direction, we've got, I don't know, you can choose your favorite way for positive x direction. Let me choose it to be this way just to be different. So here we have T2 minus M2G sine theta. This whole thing is stationary, so those forces have to add up to zero. Now, since I chose this one to be positive, it's kind of obvious to choose this one to be the same way, but let's not do that, right? Just to show that it is a choice.
So this is for a case that is stationary.
Yeah, it's stationary. So if I choose this way to be positive, now I've got T2 minus T1 plus M1g sine theta has to add up to zero. Now, we kind of should know what the answer is to all of these questions just by looking at composite objects. So effectively, T1 is actually supporting the weight of both of these guys. So this T1 should be the total mass times g times the sine of the angle. And this T2 should be just the weight of this guy times the sine of the angle. But let's see if it works out that way. So we got two equations and two unknowns. Let me recopy that other equation over here. So we've got T2 minus T1 plus M1g sine of theta equals zero. And now they won't immediately add up. So the adding trick doesn't work. But if I multiply this whole equation by minus 1, now the T2 cancels out. And what I get is T1. And all of these things are going to be minus signs. And they all are going to share this term, g sine theta. So I'm going to have an M1 plus M2, and all of that has to add up to zero. So in the end, just as we just said, the tension has to be the total mass times g times sine of theta. Okay, so I don't know why you would choose this to be the positive direction, but you can. You can choose your coordinates for different objects totally separately. In the end, you have to get the same answer. Let's take a look at this guy. So, this guy is a little bit different. If I let this thing move 1 meter this way, how far does M2 fall? So before, I said things were connected by strings, and so they had to move the same. But so M2 is actually going to fall because it's the only thing that's pushing it down.
Oh, wait, never mind.
But it kind of doesn't matter.
I see what
you're saying. Yeah, it's only going to be half a meter. And one way of thinking about it is consider the following really stupid way of accomplishing moving this thing 1 meter. So let me cut out a meter of string here and cut it in half and paste half a meter there and half a meter there. So what I've accomplished by all of this is I have moved this thing 1 meter, and by putting half a meter on both of these lines, I've lowered this guy by half a meter. You don't buy that. If you think about it, it's true. If this guy moves a meter, this guy is only going to move half a meter. So if this guy is moving 1 mile an hour, this thing's only going to move half a mile an hour. This thing is accelerating at 1 meter per second. This thing is only going to accelerate at half a meter per second. So because of this kind of funny arrangement of the strings, we no longer have the acceleration of that equaling the acceleration of that. Now, you might know that there are various reasons you would actually do this practically, and that is that this sort of arrangement leads to what's called mechanical advantage. So that if you actually had to lift this weight, you would have to do less pulling with this situation than you would have to do if you were just connected by a straight rope. So we'll talk about all of that in the future, but this is not exactly a crazy problem. Okay, so what I hope I've convinced you is that the acceleration of number one is twice the acceleration of two. Because of this kind of funny way that the strings are arranged. Okay, so with that in mind, the free body diagram for M1 is the usual, right? It's being pulled by this tension, it weighs something, and there's a normal force, but those things are just going to cancel, so they're pretty dull. So mostly what's happening here, if we choose this to be the positive direction, is that the tension is equal to M1 times the acceleration. So M2, things are a little bit different. And let me define M2 to include the pulley, because then I think it'll be a little bit clearer. So if you think about it, it's being pulled up twice. Right? Both of those strings have the same tension in it. They're both pulling it up. It weighs something. And if I choose what I call a consistent direction, that is to say, if this thing goes this way, this thing is going down, and I'll call that the positive direction, then the equation here is going to be m2g minus 2t is equal to m2 times its acceleration. Okay, so I don't know the tension, I don't know the accelerations, so three equations and three unknowns, right? So we've got M2g minus twice the tension is equal to M2a2, and we've got that the tension is equal to M1a1, and we've got that the acceleration of 1 is twice the acceleration of 2. So things like just adding them up aren't going to work. We're going to have to plug and chug our way through this. If I plug in for the acceleration of 1 there, I get that the tension is equal to twice m1 times a2. So notice different subscripts there. So this is the mass of number 1 and the acceleration of number 2. And then I can plug that in here for tension, and I've got m2g minus 2 times 2 m1 a2. That equals M2 A2. So if I put the minus sign thing on the other side of the equation, I've got M2G is equal to M2 A2 plus 4 times M1 A2, which factors into M2 plus 4 times M1 times A2. So the acceleration of the falling object depends on its mass divided by this kind of funny combination of masses, all times g. Okay, so I would call this an unexpected result. Some of these times we've been able to kind of guess what the answer was going to be. I don't think any of us would have guessed that that's the answer to this problem. Well, I don't think we'll be able to work our way through it, but let's take a look at this other problem. So here we again have a composite object, right? We've got capital M and M1 and M2, and we have this force that's applied externally. And we're supposed to figure out what force would allow everything to remain relatively stationary. That is to say that a picture of it would look the same now and in the future. So I hope it's clear that we can treat the whole thing as one composite object so that the acceleration of everything could be the force divided by the total mass, capital M plus M1 plus M2. But if we break it up into pieces, then we've got, I don't know, lots of kind of funny things. So what's causing the acceleration of M1 is the normal force, right? The normal force from the side is what's causing it to accelerate. Oops. So here it is. The normal force from the side is what's going to cause the acceleration. It's also got some tension and some weight. The guy on top, it of course has got the normal force and the weight, but as usual, those things are going to cancel. So the kind of main story is it's the tension that's causing it to accelerate. And if we wanted to, we could write a pretty complicated story for the composite object, but maybe I'll call it quits and just write down the resulting equations. So here we're going to have that the tension better equal, I can't read these guys, that's M2, huh? M2 times A. Here we have that the normal force is going to equal M1 times A, and that the tension better equal to M1G if this thing is going to be static. And finally, we've got that the overall acceleration is given by that equation.
What does it say on the bottom of that equation?
So that's the total mass, capital M plus M1 plus M2. The mass of all of those objects combined, because we're treating it as a combined object. Okay, so free body diagrams, break it up, choose coordinate system. Doesn't matter what coordinate system you choose, but in my opinion, some are better than others. And what we'll do next time is more of the same, but now we'll add another force. We'll add the frictional force to the mix. Oh, homeworks, or quizzes. Taylor? Kristen? Chris? Jesse? Jesse? You got yours? Patrick? Miles? Dan? Samantha?
It still worked.
It's all that matters.
Joe Fink? Kelly Stevens. Yep, you can just take, you can grab. Nicole, Rick, Kristen. Samantha there. Bailey.
Thank you.
Got a question for you. So, could I take the quiz a different day than Friday?
Probably. You got a good excuse?
Yes, actually. I've got an interview at
that's a good excuse.
Yep. So, and I can't find a day where I'm not missing class. Today. Yep. I have one, so.
Yep. So when do you want to take it?
I mean, I can do, let me just make sure.
So this was out of 20?
Yes.
3 points I lost was for because I had the gravity wrong.
Yeah, so this equation isn't going to work because you've got that double minus sign.
Okay.
And then this is the, I guess that's a calculator problem. So
I used yours.
Yep,
yeah.
I know. I don't think I took off for that. So I think it's this double thing there. That's,
okay.
And I guess it's also a point off for having the wrong. Well, what? Oh, maybe this is not what I thought. Yeah, I don't think there's any way that's right. So I think that should be 9.8, not 9.18.
Yeah, it is 9.8. I had it backwards in my head.
Yep. So I'll take off a point for that because that's a number that you're supposed to know. So I think this is 2 points and that's 1 point.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
So when can I take it?
I know. You should make a suggestion.
I could actually probably come in later on Friday. Well, I don't know when I'll get back actually from that. So, I could do it early on Thursday, or I could do it like.
I know, you can also do it later. So you can choose from Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Monday. Doesn't make any difference to me.
Saturday,
I'll be here on Saturday.
So Monday's day one. Yeah, I could take it on Monday, like afternoon or. Yeah, or like 8 a.m. in the morning.
Either one. I should be here either time.
I'll do in the afternoon.
Okay. So drop me an email.
Okay.
To remind me.
Okay. I'm going to remind myself.
And if that doesn't work, just send me another email. It doesn't matter to me.
Sounds good.
I just also was going to ask about doing problems on our 8.5 by 11 piece of paper for the exam. That's just kind of one thing I've always done. Just kind of helps me when I have to like see something similar.
If
you really don't like it,
Don't like it. So you can do things that are almost work problems, but kind of literally a work problem where you're using the strategy that you're talking about, where you're kind of doing problem matching. That's kind of what I'm avoiding. I want you to kind of rethink the problem.
So
one of the things that doesn't count as a work problem, so the setup that we had for the inclined plane,
that's
not a work problem. Okay. That's a setup.
So like setting up, I guess, like a problem, like the one, like the quiz, like something where it comes off having just the equations without numbers.
Well, so you should have those equations that we have for.
Yeah, I definitely will.
But I'm not sure how you would set this up in a general way that wouldn't be pretty specific.
I mean, I guess for me, like I would probably take a problem like this, like if I wasn't put on a worksheet and have it, you know, being something being thrown off a building, use this equation, then put down right next to it the one that I already have.
Yeah, I think
just no problems. Yeah, I can do that.
I think I'm not going to be happy with that. So, mostly equations, things that are setups. As I say, I probably won't do more than yell at you if you don't do it.
But I'm going to try to avoid it.
Okay.
I'm going to try to avoid it.